So anyway, it's all yours.
Thanks very much, Victoria. I'd like to actually say a word of thanks to Darren and Nadine in case it hasn't been done already. And just to say what a wonderful festival this is. There's nothing like it. And to go back a little bit, and I first met Rena Katz a few years ago in this festival, and it's just so wonderful to see people from Third Coast Audio, from all of the different American components coming here together, and it's just a really interesting way to contextualize what we all do. So I think of myself as a sound artist, and I've been living in the neighborhood of Villeray, which is just next to the Jean Talon Market, if you know Montreal at all. And it's a particularly multicultural neighborhood. Predominating culture in my immediate neighborhood is Algerian, Tunisian, but just down the street there's a very strong Asian component, and it has been typically an Italian neighborhood. And of course there's Quebecois and me, as who is an Anglo-Quebecer, a very rare breed indeed. But my neighborhood also, my downstairs neighbor is the sound artist Magali Babin, and Nathalie Durham, another Quebec interdisciplinary artist, and my partner, and she lives a block from me, and my partner Dan Mace. And so we got talking about doing a project together, and to you who was asking about career directions for a sound artist and radio artist, one of the things I think that you have to be careful of is writing a grant, because I actually saw a granting opportunity within this great little, you know, microcosm of a neighborhood of sound artists. And, you know, sometimes you have to be careful, because if you do get the grant, then you have to really deliver, you know, and that tiny little bit of money that you asked for, then you realize, uh-oh, I've got to deliver, you know, with this much money, something that is this big. Anyway, so the idea was to create some kind of sound venue for us, the artistic community in that neighborhood, so that fellow artists could play stuff for each other and to somehow liaise with the community at large, the non-artists. And my utopic ideal was for this little community radio station to really get to people from all different ethnic cultures and so on in the neighborhood. And so without really knowing whether I had the power to deliver on this, I did get a Canada Council grant for artists in the community. And so the next objective was to, to get one of those artists in the community grants, you need to have a nonprofit organization sponsoring you if you are not a nonprofit yourself. And so right next to our house is a community center which houses a number of different, it's a very vibrant community center, and it houses a number of different seniors groups, young mothers groups, and then by culture, Vietnamese, Haitian, and many, many other ethnic society groups. So they were kind enough to give us the support on the grant, and then we had to go through kind of thinking of, are we going to use one of my pirate transmitters, of which I have quite a few? How, you know, do we really want to reach a lot of people, or do we want to do this like kind of theoretical project that only goes about two blocks? And I kind of felt like, I may not actually get you know, real interest of people, everyday people, unless I get a real kind of transmitter. Also, the community center that was sponsoring us didn't want to get into anything that was potentially illegal. And so for that reason, I went about looking for a CRTC certified piece of radio equipment, a transmitter and an antenna that had been regulated so that there would be no spurious transmissions. And in retrospect, I'm kind of glad that I did that, you know, because I love the having autonomous broadcasting power, but I don't want to, you know, confuse any air traffic controllers and so on, you know. So I do see the place for the regulation. At any rate, I found a retired CRTC engineer who had his own 50-watt radio transmitter and was willing to rent me and to calibrate it and kind of fast-track us through the CRTC process, which was that in Canada, we can get a 28-day festival permit once a year, providing you go through this, what can be a very intensive rigmarole of making sure that you have the right equipment and so on. Anyway, we were lucky enough to fast track through this whole thing and got ourselves a permit for a 28-day radio festival. And that's when the fear started to really set in, because I was initially a sound artist and I just wanted to play some crazy stuff, you know, on the airwaves for me and my like-minded friends. That was kind of what I, you know, intended on doing, but of course, again, with this utopic ideal. And so I then had to meet up to the expectations of what people think is a radio station, and kind of had to follow through. Like, one of the things was I was strongly advised by everyone to never go off the air. And so 24-hour programming. Uh-oh. But so what the idea that we were going to do was to create 8 hours of programming every day and back it up on a computer and replay it. Of course, that never worked because the computers can, you know, broke down and nobody showed up on time. Nobody knew how to work anything. And so basically, I was living at the radio station. That's okay. but I'd just like to outline for you a few of the strategies that we went, that we undertook, and we got, you know, an enormous amount of participation, I'm glad to say. So one of the ways that we went about getting programming, first of all, we created a website on WordPress, which is free, completely free, and for $20 for a year, you could store, I think, something like 50 gig of audio. And so I began by doing interviews, very haphazard interviews, in the community center of my favorite subject, singing. And there were two different seniors choirs. And so I just kind of busted in on a choir practice and, you know, interviewed people about their love of singing, and they became, you know, just so happy to be able to talk about and to play what they or sing, you know, show what they do. And so I transformed that into a little 30-minute audio piece, and this is really popping the peas, eh? I'm sorry about that, and put it on the website, and interviewed a number of other community leaders. And I'm not going to show you the website. But if you want to see it, you can anytime go to http://radiojeantalon. Oh, very nice. We have it all here. radiojeantalon.wordpress.com. And so in the few months prior to the radio festival, I did, and my colleagues did, a number of little radio documentaries on a grade school in the neighborhood, a theater company that was out doing an outdoor thing, an absolutely inspiring activist named Ramon Ponce, who has a project, Projet Villeray dans l'Est, that is for new Canadians and giving them very, very ground level support in becoming new citizens. And also in my neighborhood, as I mentioned, predominantly Algerian, there's a Muslim store that exists, and who are not Muslim, I think we all just kind of glaze past the store and, you know, see the hijabs in the window, and there's this sort of, I always felt like there's this kind of separation about it. And one thing that I wanted for the radio to be able to do would be to be able to play music that people could receive in their homes, you know. And I was really interested in getting Middle Eastern music, Berber songs, and so on. Anyway, I got up my courage, and I went into the Muslim store and talked about what I was doing, and I was received so warmly, and kind of just, it was really great. And I did long interviews with the man who ran the store, who's also a spokesperson for Muslim Canadians, and he helped with people in his community to create this show about Islam in Quebec. And that really started to trigger interest and support from people in the community to have it on our website. And by the time that we were coming closer and closer to the radio festival, we had a number of different people interested in doing something. Another thing that we did to make it possible for ordinary citizens to participate was that my partner Dan gave workshops in Audacity, the free sound editing software. It's cross-platform and it's free. And the center, the community center there, gave us, in fact, the FADOC is the network of seniors organizations, and that's their home office, and they have this beautiful lab of computers. And so there were people from, you know, every race and religion in these workshops learning how to make radio shows for free. And so eventually we did get a number of different shows. A lot of people were interested in coming in once, but the real difficulty was getting volunteers for doing tech, you know, the background stuff that is so important to do. Another great strategy that came to life was from one of the sound artists on our team. She knew about a book, CD, they're a publishing label called Planète Rebelle, and so they have these CDs made of stories and Quebecois storytellers, and so we used to play this these CDs a lot, lacking anything else in content. Earlier, Emmanuel Madden spoke about his simulcast project, a very long pieces, 4 hours, 5 hours long, that he did at, I believe, a radio station in Sackville, New Brunswick. And so a lot of his artists that participated on that were from my neighborhood in Villeray. So we played some of those. But one of the interesting things about playing sound art on the radio was that I kept getting phone calls at 6 a.m. saying, something's really wrong with the station, all these funny noises. And so we had a number of live improvisations, some of the craziest stuff. I mean, I'm coming from a long career at CKUT, where experimental radio is the norm. And so if I say crazy stuff, I mean crazy stuff. We were also lucky enough to get a number of CBC journalists who were no longer under the employ of the CBC, who came and gave their services to us for free, which was wonderful. Both, if any of you remember the show Navire Night by Mario Gauthier and Hélène Prévost, they were both on the show talking about different things. Magali did, who's a mom, and she also did some workshops of sound art to interest children and teens. And so she held these teen sound art workshops in her basement with her teenage son's friends, and gave them the opportunity to every Saturday make their own Radio Ado show talking about hockey and what have you. So there was an extremely wide range of stuff that went on. And I could go on, but I'm going to probably cut a little short, maybe give you a little taste of Mario Gauthier's very, very insightful interview about radio with Magali. Let me just play a few seconds of that.
De quoi ça, sur quoi l'ouverture nous ouvrait, mais nous allons l'écouter puis on en revient ensuite.
In the grooves of this record is the sound of John Cage. John Cage, the avant-garde electronic composer, has been astounding audiences with such non-musical sounds, such as sitting at a piano for 4 minutes presenting a silent sonata, designating the opening and closing of a movement by the act of opening and closing the keyboard cover on the piano.
So you have this kind of interesting context where very well-known and respected radio aficionados in Quebec, like Mario Gauthier, are coming on our airwaves and with, you know, really just prized sonic real estate and coming on and kind of trying to explain what sound art is, knowing that it's an audience of, it could be just anybody there. And then there were lots of first times. Gentlemen from Algeria found out about this and just brought the most beautiful chanson berbère, which was really, you know, locally specific to the people who lived right around there, and you could hear them. You know, the next day I would walk by and all the guys from the cafe would be, that was fun. This is during the opening of the launch. I got everyone in the room to sing, as is my wont.
106.7 FM.
Interesting adventure for me to just to become really, really involved in my community. I live as a freelance artist. You know, I don't get up and go to work like other people, and I sometimes feel marginalized. And this project really gave me a sense of belonging. And particularly as an Anglophone living in, you know, a pretty strong French place, I almost never, and I think you can hear my French isn't perfect, but by the end of the project, just out of necessity, you know, and out of respect to my listenership, I think my French improved. Then we had a Latino show.
Radio Yantalón, 106.7 FM, un proyecto piloto de radio comunitaria que estará en el aire del 2 de octubre hasta el 30. No se lo pierdan, un artista, una gama de artistas de todos los talentos van a venir aquí del Cartier Villary, para orgullo de esta tierra, para orgullo nuestro, los latinos, escuchando Radio Yantalón 106.FM.
I think one of the nicest things, though, was the seniors. And I got to meet these amazing people who... And they did, you know, they have the habit of listening to the radio, and the idea of hearing themselves and hearing songs from their era was a real source of vitality to them. Oh, I'd just also like to point out that there was one gentleman who came to the center, and he we had a 50-watt transmitter, and the center was the highest building around, and so we had a good antenna placement, and we got all the way off the island of Montreal, so like to Repentigny, in an enormous, kind of a frighteningly large listenership. I always fear the worst, you know. But so one gentleman came in, and he lived a block away. He could point us to his window from our office, and he had a complaint that the radio signal was coming into his mother's TV, and it was an old kind of TV. And if he moved the TV maybe 2 feet away, it wouldn't happen anymore. And so he came in at around day 4 of this 28-day festival. And so we, you know, we kept him, we showed him what we're doing, and this is all volunteer, and, you know, my partner Dan and I were pretty much 24 hours a day. And we even gave him, like, adapters that might help his TV. His mother's TV, and didn't help, and he came again, and we spent a lot more time with him. And then 2 days before the end of the transmission festival, we got a call from the CRTC that he had finally filed that complaint. And so the CRTC, because we were emitting spurious transmissions, so the CRTC came with a truck and with a big bunch of calibrating gear, and fortunately our engineer Mike just happened to have another spare compressor after like about a day of checking everything. And just imagine how much, you know, money was spent on getting that engineer and all his gear there. And so the last show, my partner, you know, dedicated it out to Denis's mom, if you're still hearing. Anyway. So... I should stop there, but I'd just like to give you just a taste of my one of my last pieces, which was a composition. And the other interesting thing about that neighborhood is that there are about 5-6 churches all around, and so at 6 p.m. I've always been hearing the church bells, from all the different bells ringing back and forth. And my first gig was choir director in the church that I can see from my back balcony. So I have a lot of relationship with these bells. And so I chose my own recording time, my own show time, which was at 6 p.m., one of the last shows. And I had been collecting different sound recordings of the bells. I'd also like to point out that we did a lot of field recording, and you know, we just put a mic out at Jean Talon Market and would play some of the things, some of the buskers, and it was really beautiful radio stuff. But so these last few moments for me were I can't say how much I enjoyed it, because it was this beautiful bouncing of bells mixed with my field recording of bells and me singing along with the bells, with the radio pointed out the microphone pointed out the window with the live bells, and just the feeling of being that person there, you know, broadcasting. It was total bats in my belfry, but I was loving it all the way. So I will stop. I will cease to speak now, and just play you maybe, if I can, just a few moments of that beautiful ethereal bell moment. That's not it. And right across from our office was the Vietnamese Gentlemen's Association, where they would play mahjong. And it goes from the swishing of the mahjong tiles into the bells. Anytime you want to hear any of the shows, they're at radiojeantalon.wordpress.com. Thanks.
I didn't know whether you wanted me to introduce you, but I remember Rena's, I think it was your first deep wireless performance. Was it at the Drake Hotel a few years back when you did a...
It was the Rivoli, I believe.
Yeah, I remember one at the Drake, so you must have done a couple, but okay. I know Rena Katz has done presentations at Deep Wireless for more than a few years now, and at Radio Without Boundaries, and her work is highly collaborative and answers and asks a whole bunch of different questions, so we're glad to have her back. And also Emmy Panton, who is here from the Center for Digital Storytelling, which I don't know a lot about, but I'd like to know more about it. So from Montreal to Toronto, welcome Emmy and Rena.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, I'll start. So this is Emmy. So the audio work that Rena and I are going to be talking about is from a larger project called the Neighborhood Story Project. So between October and December 2009, Jennifer LaFontaine of the Center for Digital Storytelling and I worked with a group of immigrant women to create media about priority neighborhoods in Toronto. So as I was kind of saying to Victoria earlier, the Toronto is quite massively large, I think, as for a city. It's, you know, it was amalgamated several, like a decade or more ago, from four other cities into one big mega city. And so surrounding sort of Toronto proper are all what we call the inner suburbs, which used to be their own cities. And so a lot of these women lived or were kind of working in these neighborhoods, and that's where a lot of the work took place. So we wanted to create media about these neighborhoods, and so we invited Rena Katz to join the project to coordinate the production of place-based audio portraits. The whole project was place-based. So that's where Rena came in.
Yeah, I was really thrilled to join Jen and Emmy in working on this project. And the kind of cool thing about the audio component was that it complemented the digital stories, which were very personal narratives and kind of followed a specific structure. So with the audio work that we were doing, it was much more open-ended.
Right, so about the program itself, or maybe do we want to play a piece to
yeah,
start?
Yeah, I was yeah. thinking maybe it's a bit of an improvised presentation.
It's popcorn.
I guess I should just intro it a little bit by saying that there were 13 participants, and they were involved in a program that identified these problem neighborhoods in Toronto, which we were very interested in sort of critiquing from an arts-based perspective. Not only the whole notion of problematizing a neighborhood, but also the way that data gets collected about people's lives.
Right, so more about that. So the program was called the Immigrant Women's Integration Program, and it's run through the Center for Community Learning and Development. And so the women came from all kinds of different cultural communities and geographic communities, as I said, from the inner suburbs, some from downtown, all over the place. Some had immigrated really recently, and then others had been here for quite a while. The one thing they probably almost all had in common was a pretty high level of education. So the Immigrant Women's Integration Program, we'll just call it IWIP. I love it, so cute. So the IWIP participants, through this program, spend a year, it's like a leadership development program. They spend a year exploring a particular neighborhood. So they're assigned a neighborhood, not necessarily one that they live in. And they spend a year exploring a neighborhood through a needs assessment. And it is, we can talk about the curriculum in a minute, but it's that needs assessment is really sort of statistics-based. It's gathering sort of data through surveys and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the digital story component really opens that up to talk about neighborhoods from an emotional perspective, from a memory-based perspective, from a multi-sensory perspective. And specifically with the sound work, I sort of designed a curriculum that allowed the women to open up what they thought sound might be for them through listening to their neighborhood and listening to their homes. So the first thing I thought we could play is one of the participants, Ambar, who's, this is actually her image, the fish and the CN Tower from her digital story. She's just talking a little bit about what her experience was of making sound work for the first time.
Hi, my name is Ambar Saba. When people listen my audio piece, maybe some people will think about that. Oh, I never think about it in that way. Oh, and maybe some people will think that's my feelings about my neighborhood. The audio project helped myself to express feelings and thoughts about my neighborhood.
Yeah, so the IWIP curriculum is really, as I said, about, I mean, it's the idea is to engage the participants in an examination of different neighborhoods in Toronto, but again, it's really sort of, graphs and analyzing statistics and doing surveys, and so instead, our goal was to use place-based storytelling and media production to deepen their connection and understanding of the needs or realities of these different neighborhoods in Toronto.
So we wanted to show you a little visual image of all the participants so you could get to know them a little bit. Their names are up there as well. And I think one of the key things is the fact that all of the participants were women. And almost all of them had children that they were raising at home. And there were lots of different sort of family situations that they were living and working with. So a lot of the sounds that they collected involved their families, involved childhood issues. And the one that we wanted to play for you first is Roya's piece called Childhood. So, you know, the composition of that work was Roya's sort of exploration of looking at language acquisition, the languages that her kids speak at home and the languages that they're learning at school, obviously English, and the use of song to understand those languages, and also the timeline of a child's life from a baby to a toddler. So I just found that piece to just be this beautiful and poetic way of opening that up. And you know, that was after like a few hours of sort of exploring sound. And we'll go into more details about that methodology.
Yeah, Roya took to the process pretty good, huh? Like she really took to it and was really good at thinking abstractly about layering sound and sort of moving forward through time and deepening through time. So the process that we used to do this work was a kind of, the Center for Digital Storytelling uses a pop ed or popular education methodology to do its work. And so there were workshops. The idea is that the women would come and sort of learn skills and then immediately kind of use them. So that really that participatory learning, not just learning something, but then, you know, supporting people through the use of those skills, it can help break isolation and make it possible for a group of people to learn and create art through process together. So we learned things as a group and tried to move forward through those skills as a group. So we also, you know, through the popular education methodology, it involved, as I said, skill building workshops, peer review, and feedback.
Yeah, and I think, as we were mentioning earlier, the real critical piece to our involvement, to an arts-based sort of involvement in this project, was looking at what community can really mean and what neighborhoods can really mean for the people who live there. One of the members of the group did a beautiful digital story about coming to Canada on her second day in Canada. She already noticed the way that the park in her neighborhood was bringing people together and immediately joined the support group in the park to try to save the park and get park equipment for the kids. So we were much more interested in that sort of level of knowledge than the data collecting that they were doing as part of this larger integration program. Mm-hmm. And to deepen an understanding of what their community looked like, to include emotional knowledge, to include memories as knowledge, and to also include their experience of migration as part of the whole self that they bring to their communities in Canada.
Yeah, and it was about that kind of self-representation that so often media is about, you know, representing others, and this was really a moment for these women to represent their own communities, to deepen their understanding of their communities, and then to speak, to have their voices heard. So as I was saying, that these inner suburbs, these sort of outerlying neighborhoods in Toronto are often... they're rarely represented, and when they are, they're often represented as problematic areas, as areas of like high crime or violence or just scary, dirty, messy, ugly places. And so this was an opportunity for these women to articulate their own vision of their neighborhoods, and that they are people who live in these neighborhoods, that their voice matters.
So the next little clip we wanted to play for you is from Fresia, who was working in Lawrence Heights, I believe, and just her experience of collecting audio there.
My name is Fresia Londono. I am from Lawrence Heights. When I take the recorder in my community, I know all the situation around this community. The sounds, the people, and the different situation in this community. I take a recorder about subway, I take a recorder about traffic, I take a recorder about birds on the park, and children on the background. It's important for me, this sound, because through the sounds, I know more my community, and other people analyze the different situation about different needs, about different situation in this community.
And Fresia ended up doing an audio piece about her father, who is a senior and experiencing a lot of isolation. As a result of his position as an immigrant, as his position as a senior who's living without his partner. And she had a really interesting sort of field recording experience where she thought she could go to the mall, which is where he spends most of his time with his friends, and record all of his friends, as well as her dad, talking about their lives as seniors. But what she found was that people didn't want to talk to her, or the day that she happened to go to the mall, there weren't people there. And she ended up interviewing her father in Spanish about his experience and having that situation that I'm sure we've all experienced as sound artists, where he wasn't very forthcoming with what she knew his experience was and what she had heard him tell stories about. But the presence of a recorder and perhaps the context that she was asking in really forced her to be creative with how she got that information from her father.
Yeah, and in the end, what the piece ended up being quite short. I think it was one of the shortest ones, like a minute. But in the end, it was just became this sort of meditation about his isolation and his how close he was to death. Like, he says to her, I'm gonna die soon. And she sort of protests, no, no. And he just says, like, yes, I am. And anyways, it's, and then she has what she describes in that little piece that we just heard her speaking. She has the sound of birds and bells and traffic, and it's actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, and the visual that you're looking at is a screen capture of the broadcast method that we used for the project. So because there were digital stories as well as photography and audio pieces, it was actually all of you guys. I wasn't part of this, but...
Right, well, the women actually... So the media production and the sort of participatory method we did through the whole process. So they took the photos, they made the audio art, they made the digital stories, which are little short 2 to 5 minute films. And then they actually, we had a workshop and we used Google Maps and we posted these together online. And so they helped build this map and they placed their photos and their stuff. So this map that you're seeing is actually the story map. So each pin represents either a photograph. I think the red are photographs, the blue are audio, and the green are digital stories. And you can explore the city of Toronto through these maps, through their stories.
But it's on the web?
Yeah, and we're going to give the web address at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a long URL, so we thought we'd put it on the PowerPoint. So, yeah, we thought we would focus a bit more on talking about this notion of arts-based research, which definitely relates to radio and certainly experimental radio, and was very applicable in our project. So this sort of term, arts-based research, is being used a lot in sociology to talk about ways of gathering data and understanding the experiences of specific groups. And in this case, this notion of the problem neighborhood. So what we found, I think Emmy's approach and my approach, has very much been a sort of grassroots DIY media kind of perspective. So we found that bringing in our own recorders, that having laptops, having even cell phones with audio recording capabilities, made the sort of isolating experience of media much less. And certainly as women, as a woman myself, I've often felt a barrier around technologies. And lots of the women talked about a kind of process where they would learn one thing and then they would learn the next and the next and build confidence around using these technologies. And certainly when they're familiar, when they're things that they have themselves or they've seen often in their kids' rooms, they were more apt to sort of move towards using these media, and that broke a sense of social isolation and allowed them to feel participatory in telling these stories.
Yeah, and that conquering fear was a huge part of the process because, so Jen LaFontaine did the first workshops around photography, and the women were, you know, either had their own or were, you know, loaned a digital camera. And they had to kind of figure out, well, how do I really use this thing? How do I use it thoughtfully? So that after the first session with the audio art, we said, okay, like, we're going to start doing some exploration around sound and stuff. And during a break, like, we were heading out, or maybe it was at the end of the day, we were sort of heading out, and I overheard two of the women say to each other, well, we figured out the cameras. We'll figure out the next thing. And so there was like a huge conquering of fear. Like, they really came to, I mean, frankly, a field recorder is a freaky thing. I think so. For someone who's not into audio, like, what is this? I don't even know how this works. And so they managed to just approach it without fear and conquer it and come to a place where they could master it. And all the clips that you're hearing of the women sort of reflecting on their experience was recorded by one of the iWeb participants recently. So,
yeah, so it's really a skill that they continue to use. And when I was designing the curriculum of how to approach the workshop, I wanted to use the sound walk, which is something I use all the time in my research. and is as something that has no technology, you know, except for our own physical, biological technologies for listening. So I devised a sound walk in the neighborhood of Regent Park, which is also a targeted problem neighborhood. It's where I live, and it's where the Center for Digital Storytelling office is. And we walked around Regent and listened to a variety of sounds, the kinds of things we all hear in urban spaces, but also because Regent is currently under development, it was a particular moment to sort of go on this sound walk. And we talked about how we experience sound in our bodies. We talked about memories, thoughts, and dreams. We talked about machines and technologies as sound. We had probably an hour and a half discussion, and you'll see some of the images, where we just filled a whiteboard with hundreds of different kinds of sounds. And a lot of that had to do with language as well. So this was sort of the material research that we did to move on to produce these audio pieces. And the only kind of framework for the audio piece was that it had to have to do with their neighborhood. We also talked about the notion of listening as a transformational experience, as a way to communicate with people we love, as a way to work through conflict. Another thing that's very common, I find, in women's communities is that sharing and skill sharing was just an automatic on the table sort of practice. So we had, I believe, 4 recorders. People figured out a schedule in 5 minutes. There was, you know, they had the technician, they had the artist, and some of them lived in the same neighborhood, so they'd go over to each other's house, drop off the recorder. And all of this kind of DIY grassroots level media contributed, I think, to the success of the stories and how the women's relationships to each other came through in the stories and in the documentation of the stories. Another thing that we, as Emmy mentioned, that we made sure was part of the process was this idea of peer feedback. So while the women were just getting their feet wet with this kind of audio technology, they were also learning how to talk about work and what kinds of issues come up as listeners when we're experiencing sound art. So is a piece too quiet? Is a piece too long? Is a sound too unrecognizable? Does it really tell the story that we want to be telling? And we would have feedback circles where people would give ideas and thoughts as the work developed.
Yeah, and that feedback becomes a place to think critically about the work that you're doing, and also to support each other and to grow through that. And it was very interesting.
Definitely. These are just a couple images. That's me in front of the sound word board. We color-coded it into different categories. And, it was a really exciting conversation. And I think we wanted to talk a bit about the variety of content that came through in the pieces. So I did a little word map that'll build as we talk. This is Soraya's digital story, where I believe she talks about moving into the new condos in Regent Park. It's great. You can find it on the map. So there was, as I said earlier, just a huge variety of themes that came up for these women. And one of the pieces of the puzzle that's important to me is that it's not this sort of Canadian mosaic, multicultural, happy diversity picture. There was some pain that came up. There was some tension and difficulty. One of the pieces we're going to play for you at the end of our presentation has to do with undocumented people and how they're marginalized in our society. And everyone brought their own experience with sound. There were poets, there were women who were learning how to play instruments, there was lots of songs as we were playing before.
There was lots of kitchens, cooking, just being in the home, clocks ticking, interesting kind of the neighborhood is this really specific location of your home. And there were also routes, like routes to work or routes to school, taking children to school or those kinds of things.
Yeah, phone conversations, yeah. Struggles with family, arguments. We had a couple women attempt to sort of script out some of their conflicts with their kids and act it out.
There was Sonia who made the piece where she sort of did a description of her sort of immigration experience, which ended in a conflict with her son. So it began with her, you know, phones ringing. And then, you know, she's on the phone saying in Spanish, I'm very busy, I can't talk to you right now. And so she's sort of performing, like, this is what my work life looked like before I came here. And then she moves, you hear a vacuum and water running, dishes kind of clinking. And then this boss, like, sort of, hurry up, go faster, be faster. And then she, under breath, she's like, oh, this boss is such a jerk, right? She's totally acting out. And so then this, she's sort of describing, this is what my work life looks like here. And then her son sort of is saying, like, you're a failure and I hate you. And the loud rock music. And it's really interesting that she kind of gives this portrait of, like, these are the three kind of places I've been, and it's a struggle.
Yeah, and really only one of the women addressed the sort of what we might see as the typical, like, criminalization of these neighborhoods, as there being some gun violence. And what she did was it was called Hope and Fear.
No, Jane and Finch, Pain and Hope.
Right, Jane and Finch, Pain and Hope. And she really contextualized that violence into the parts of her neighborhood that she loved. She loved going to the library. She loved, I think it was, walking through the park. And she recorded some bus conversations that were actually in Spanish. Just to show this journey through place, so that it was less, much more than a headline, you know. And so often that's what we see about these neighborhoods is the headline. Mm-hmm. So I'll just speed this up a little. I found with my PowerPoint that when I told it to do like half a second, it would really take like 3 seconds. I don't know if anyone else has that issue. Computer time. So maybe before we do this sort of part, because maybe we should probably move forward, I wanted to just play a small clip of one of the participants' experience with learning technology.
Hello, my name is Olga. For me, it was important emotion. Hear my voice and my history and how we can change the sad feelings to smile and funny lovers. Many people was feel identified with the violence against women. But with Wendo class, we feel powerful and safe in the streets. I try to connect my afraid with the solution. And in the finish, many people was excited about my audio project.
Yeah, so Olga, I mean, that's another kind of moment where, you know, a woman is telling a story that's important to her, and for her, the sort of site or location was this Wendo class. But for her, that was like part of the solution. And actually, that came through critique, through the peer review, right? Where initially she had a scripted kind of like violent and domestic violence encounters. So there was like an abusive man and a woman crying and a child saying, oh, mommy. And we kind of played it. And I remember people saying, like, okay, but what could happen? Or is there something positive that could happen, or a solution, or something that you can bring to that? And she thought about it, and she thought, like, she just went to this Wendo class and thought, like, well, I think that's what I could bring to it. And so her piece still has that, you know, beginning, and then it becomes this real, like, you can hear a bit of the class, and then there's just a lot of laughter and a lot of, like, I think she's there with her children, with her daughters, and there's a lot of kind of, like,
empowerment, I would
say.
Yeah,
sure.
It was a really positive end to this piece that was, you know, her personal document with domestic violence. So the images you're looking at now are from the technology part of the workshop, and they're just pretty delightful to show. They really embody the way in which we created an environment where the women just experimented and explored with the tools.
Yeah, we developed like these little handouts that were like a quick guide to how to use these things. And then we sat in groups, because as Rena said, I think we had three recorders, maybe four. And we sat in groups for each recorder. And so each group of women had a different technology that they were learning how to use, or a different recorder. And then they just kind of played with it and tried to figure it out and supported each other through that.
Yeah, we did little experiments outside the office. And like you said, we also chose to use Audacity because it was free to download and fairly easy to learn. And it was incredible the speed with which they picked up the skills, not only the recording skills, issues of direction with microphones, recording levels, all those details, and then into the editing process where they were each working with a laptop or a computer and just working away on Audacity, learning how to edit as they went and sort of conceptualizing a final edited piece. And as you see here, very much helping each other out with that process.
There's definitely, you know, like a feeling in our culture that, in many cultures, that technology is the domain of men, especially digital technology. And the story I always tell is going into Henry's camera and seeing this guy playing with this massive lens. And I just was like, come on. But anyways, so that there was something really... that felt really good about seeing this group of women just take up the challenge of mastering this technology and making it their own and doing with it what they thought was important.
Yeah, so I think we can move to our last piece. And we'll give you the website. We're done just scrolling through these guys. So this is Valeria's piece.
Silence, aislados, non-status, alienated,
desarparás,
denied, deportados,
tabaiz en jardín,
takawa. Illegal.
Isolation. Aislados.
Silence.
Besar para
aislados.
Tabaiz en jardín.
Non-status. Undocumented.
Ten more questions.
Denied. Discriminate. Deportation. Reject. Isolation. Breakdown. Excluded. Non-status. Marginal. Deny. Undocumented. Illegal. Discriminate. Deportation. Rejected. Isolation. Breakdown. Excluded. Non-status. Marginal. Deny. Undocumented. Illegal. Discriminate. Deportation. Rejected. Isolation. Breakdown. Excluded. Non-status. Marginado.
Takawa.
Deny. Undocumented. Illegal. Discriminate. Deportation. Rejected. Isolation. Breakdown. Excluded. Non-status. Marginado.
Nice.
So here's the website, as we said. It's www.storycenter.wordpress.com.
And you can see, I mean, that's all the Center for Digital Storytelling in Toronto stuff, but you can, there's the story map is up there and you can have a look at it. And again, each of the points, you know, sort of the places where photos come from or the stories take place or the audio stuff takes place are plotted on the map. And you can just explore the city through the eyes of these women. Thanks.
Thank you.
And as per usual, if anyone has any questions, don't forget there's a microphone over there because this is radio.
I had a question mostly for Kathy, I guess. You mentioned that people would hear the experimental sound art and think there was a problem with the station, but did you have any cases where people, non-artists, I guess, were really turned on to sound art by this? And if not, how do you think that would be possible?
That's a good question. I only heard the complaints. The buck stopped right here. Yeah. And no, actually, I heard so many complaints. Like there was this speaking about the Middle Eastern thing. One of our DJs brought in this really experimental music from Lebanon or something, and she got such a calling down from the people at the local store. You know, now they're gonna hate us even more with those crazy sounds. So I have to say, I didn't get a lot of positive feedback, but there were so many different levels of artistic intervention in such a wildly unmoderated project as mine, that there were some things that were, you know, more concert-like, and they would be back-to-back against, you know, really weird things. But I did get some feedback on the field recordings of the neighborhood, you know, and everybody could relate to that and saw that as an entry into sound art.
It's a question about the second presentation. You talked a lot about the experience of the women in terms of creating the content, but can you say something about how people listened to the content or heard the content and how, in a sense, it was consumed and what sort of effect that had?
Sure, yeah, that stage is actually sort of more current. There's going to be an opening on the 10th.
11th.
On the 11th, sorry, of June, in the new Regent Park Arts Center sort of thing that's going on there. So that's really, I guess, the first encounter with a public in person. It's been on the website for...
Since December, I think, or January?
I think so. Audio stories.
Yeah, I think so. Also, I think the women have used the audio in workshops and have said that it's been a way, a really interesting way to begin a dialogue and an entry point for people to kind of... think through some of the issues that come up in the pieces.
So those same needs assessments they kept talking about the graphs and the charts and stuff, they made a lot of presentations back to their own communities, and they included that art as their presentations or as part of their presentations. So it actually became really fused together that they initiated themselves, that was a vital part of sharing what their community was.
Thanks, Jen LaFontaine. And also like that it created a bigger, a more sort of dynamic portrait of these neighborhoods than just like stats and graphs and pie charts and that kind of stuff.
I guess if I could just respond a little more to your question, which has a lot of meat in it, I think, because during the whole 28-day festival, a lot of my sound art friends would come, you know, and with the noisiest, the most abrasive, static-y kind of stuff, you know, and it really made me kind of think about how we make art and who we make it for, because those noises were just disturbing. There's just no other way to look at it, you know? And where that would be in a gallery in Montreal, we would all talk about, did you hear that squeak? No, I like that squeak, though. And, you know, and when you're putting that out there for people who have no sense of it, it's full-on disturbing. I don't know. I find something very interesting there.
My question is to Rena and also Emmy. And I guess so the question, I'll sort of explain a bit more after I ask it, just why this comes up. But did you get pressure to want to include video? And the reason why I ask this is because when I do sound art workshops, people always go, oh, good, well, we can put video with it, or why don't we put it on YouTube? And it's like, that's one thing that I have a real difficulty with as a sound artist is so many people think it's an incomplete form because you have to have something to do with your eyes. You know, I did a session once, it's just like, but what do we do with our eyes? You know, it's like, so it's always like trying to take that, you know, like we are a visually dominant culture. How much do we give into that? And personally, I'm starting to give into it more, and I have very mixed feelings about that.
Well, I would say I was actually amazed at not only how easy it was just to sort of present the concept of sound art, but also the participants had no question that this in and of itself was a complete way to show art and experience. I think also because the project does involve a video component and a photography component, there was that way to sort of address it visually. And I mean, Emmy's a sound artist as well, so I felt that it was just an organic way to kind of to enter into that realm.
We kind of like were pretty, because there was photography and video as part of the larger project, we, you know, sort of made each area discrete. So it was clear from the beginning, like this, the sound is going to be its own thing. And so people knew, like, they weren't expecting it. And I was actually shocked, like, at what you said, Rena, that they really did just kind of take to it as its own art form, and they weren't troubled at all by the fact that there weren't images and whatever. And maybe it had to do with the fact that there was photography and video elsewhere, but they really took to it.
I think perhaps North American culture is a little more visual centric as well, and so they were bringing a lot of their experience from all over the world into that notion of sound.
I guess this is the same question for both of you, but it'd probably be answered in sort of different ways. Like, did you find that the participants in your two projects persisted or like got interested then in continuing making sound art in the second example and in community radio in the first example? Mm. Was there any sort of sustained interest or activity in that mm-hmm. direction?
In mine, very much so. And proof to me was, you know, the next day I went to the Dépanneur, which is the corner store, and the guy at the Dépanneur says to me, "Where's our radio station?" And we got a lot of calls afterward with people wanting to do this.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think... I don't know if I'll, like, so now we have 13 new audio artists, like, who are gonna, I don't know if that's gonna happen, but I think there is, like, certainly this, they've taken media production, and including audio art, radio, photography, and digital storytelling as tools to deepen, to open up dialogue and to deepen their understanding of a community. So I think that that's definitely another tool that they have taken up as a possibility for whatever work that they end up doing. 'Cause remember, they're being trained as leaders that are going to work in social service settings or not-for-profit, so I don't necessarily know that they're going to go into art. But, you know, like, we had this, there was that one woman, Fresia, had this real, at the beginning of the project and through it, she really was like, I'm here to do, like, this work, and I don't understand what all this stuff has to do with it and why I'm, like, shooting cameras and pointing recorders and whatever, but these are assignments, and I'll do it. It's really school-like, in the program. And so so she, like, dutifully kind of met every requirement but wasn't that into it. And then it's like, over the period, how much time did we have to actually edit the audio? Do you remember, Rena? Like, 2 hours? Two weeks?
Yeah, in one session.
Yeah, yeah, two hours. And so over that, like, 2 or 3 hours that I kind of sat with her, like, she struggled. She was like, oh, I have all this useless crap from my father. Like, I don't know what he's... Like, there's nothing interesting here. Well, there you go. But anyway, so she sort of said, there's nothing here. And so I sat with her, and I was like, what do you mean? He says, I'm going to die soon. Like, isn't that something? And she goes, oh, yeah. You mean we can just take that and use that? I was like, yeah. And then we sort of like, oh, you know, what other sound is, oh, these bells, oh, like, the bells tolling. And then as she started to build it, it's like I watched her kind of move from a place of like, I don't know that what this has to do with anything, to a place where, oh, like it deepened her connection to this place and to the people around her, and it just opened something up for her. And from there, she was really open and saw the value of art as a method for communicating and for opening up dialogue.
Oh, could I add just something about the community radio issue? Is that a lot of people involved in my project really were invested in trying to get it to continue. And because I did have this inside with former CRTC personnel, it was, we could have rolled over another 28-day festival. I would have rolled over and died if it, I was like, please, can this stop? But my point was that, so a lot of people during that wanted to start their own community radio station. And we received enough press and attention that I got a call from ARC, the, wait a minute now, Association Radio, Radio Community Radio of Quebec, and the gentleman who works there kind of explained to me, you know, community radio really needs a lot of people, and he was trying to explain to me it's a lot of work, and I get that now. But also, you know, he had a talk with me in trying to not dissipate all the energy and funds for community radio. And so instead of pushing for our own radio station, I did pass on a lot of the people who'd gotten their show to Radio Centreville and CKUT to get their own show, because maybe we don't need, you know, well, we have one Haitian radio station and we have one, maybe we don't need a whole Latino station in Montreal. Maybe we just need a few shows, you know, within the community radio community. So I felt it important to just kind of, also the fact that we got to this point in the project where we started to realize the bigger picture of how many stations there are and how we should be pooling our resources, because the point was to give people a voice, you know, not to, to have the more power over the island.
What do you think?
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted also to thank New Adventures in Sound Art and the radios with the Radio Without Boundaries conference. It was really a pleasure to be here, and I deeply appreciate the work that NYSA does all through the year and the amazing presentations they make. So thanks to you all.
And we're wrapping up a little bit ahead of schedule, but just a reminder that tonight's performance begins at 8 p.m., so you have time for a nice long supper or to, you know, go home and feed the dog if you need to and that kind of thing. So tonight's performance will feature Gregory Whitehead, who's also a perennial favorite here. I've been told that HP's show Revisited by Patrick Reddy and Hank Bull, in fact, will not pay us a visit after all. So it was going to be a taped piece, but it's not going to be happening. But Transformations Manifesto 2010 by Rebecca Singh, Shy Birds by Charlotte Scott, and Horns of Plenty by Stephen Naylor will indeed be happening. And that's here tonight at 8 o'clock. So please do come back. And tomorrow we'll have another full day of presentations. And so, yeah, so go disperse.